Momofuku goods, including our Chili Cruncher noodles, are available at fine retailers near you, including Target, Whole Foods, Kroger, and more. If you want our entire line of noodles, sauces, and Chili Crunch delivered to your door, you can go to shop.momofuku.com. Our Discord users can get a link with a code that gets you 10% off from our friends channel. I found out this is a good gift that parents send to their kids in college.
Ingenious.
Also, I got to figure out how we can get this into hunting stores, outdoor stores.
Oh,
as like- Stephen Ranella has told me that it's a fantastic camping. So if you're an outdoorsman, not an indoorsman, you should check it out for camping.
It's for indoor and outdoor use.
Yeah. Anyway, go check out Momofuku Goods. It's delicious. There are some new products coming out there, and you might have seen it on our Netflix Dinner Time Live show. We'll be coming back to you very, very soon. A couple sauces, a couple new things that I'm not allowed to talk about. Even talking about them is going to get me in trouble. But they're out there, and they're very, very good. So yes, we've been renewed for a second season. We have 10 more episodes of Kiefer Sutherland's 24 as a cooking show. Ready for 10 more, and maybe that's the last 10 Netflix will ever commit to a culinary live series. I don't blame them. As chimpanzees, we're allowed to come back to Earth from flying to outer space, and we're coming back up for 10 more missions, Chris Yang.
I can't believe we get to go back after. I thought that it was a one and done chimpanzee mission.
If it really is that this is it, okay, we did it. We got picked up for 10 more. We can hold our head high.
It really is exactly what you said. It really is the equivalent of, hey, that chimpanzee survived. Let's send it back up there. See what else it can do.
And for all these motherfuckers that complain and say it sucks, listen, we're just giving you the real thing and everything else isn't. We could do it. You want us to do an edited version? We should one day. But we're also trying something else that's new and different, even though it may not seem so to you. And our other show on Hulu and Freeform, Chrissy and Dave Dine Out, available streaming all the episodes. Catch Chrissy Teigen, myself, Joel Kim Booster, and some of LA's best restaurants. Not every restaurant.
Oh, man, they chose five restaurants.
Seriously? We have five restaurants. And I didn't realize that when this show was being made, we were making it for you, specifically you listening, throwing your fist, clench fist in the air, being like, but what about this restaurant?
We left them out to piss you off specifically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You specifically.
She's not from Los Angeles.
Neither are you. Neither are you, dude. Let's get that off my chest. We'll get on to the show. Welcome to the Dave Chang Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network, presented by Major Devil Media. Thank you, Olatengo, as always. Joined with Chris Yang. I'm calling you guys from Mexico. We had 2 weeks dark on this Netflix series, and we decided to hitch on to our friend's trip because it cost us very little, which is why we did it. But a year ago, on the same trip, I herniated my two discs, my L5 S1. And it made me want to amputate my right leg. And it turned into 2 months of a lot of shit. And I have now, on an x-ray, screwed up two different vertebrae in my neck. And this happened pre-first episode of Dinner Time Live. And I thought it was maybe psychosomatic. But man, it is, you know, this isn't going to be an entire podcast of me just talking about my back pain. But like, man, I'm at my wit's end, guys. Past year has been battling back issues on and off. And now this shoulder thing is certainly a nerve thing because it's in my elbow, my wrist, my back, my right arm. And it is most painful when I try to fall asleep.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And I will, to your credit, I will say you have, I mean, I always think of you this way, but you have a high pain tolerance, generally speaking.
I think I do. I'm not gonna say I pride myself on it, but I think that I do. And man, take care of your backs, guys. I don't know what is happening. I didn't even do anything to cause this, although the x-ray showed that, you know, the doctor was like, you're just old. I was like, oh, that's, and you use your right side a lot. So it's a mixture of arthritis, a lot of inflammation, and these two discs that I'm gonna get an MRI when I get back on Friday morning. And I hope, I don't know. I'm, I'm talking to you guys like totally surrendering to the idea that I have control over anything, because this is, I'm losing my marbles at the constant pain. Just constant. So if I'm trying, every time I try to get in really good shape, I get hurt. I'm trying to do this almost like a TB12 diet, whatever. I'm like, dude, like I'm going to try anything.
Supplements,
I'm willing to try anything. If I need to believe the earth is flat, fine. Fuck it.
You didn't need shoulder pain to get you there. We knew you were headed there anyway. Come on now. Have you always been a doc? I admit I am a lifelong wait and see guy. Have you always been a doctor goer? Like you have something, you go to the doctor.
So I lived in Chelsea in New York and always going to our offices, which is across Union Square. I'd walk there and I would drop by my doctor's office in Union Square, dead center, right in the middle of the park every week.
He had a booth in the middle of the park.
I didn't even have a standing appointment. I was like Cliff from Cheers.
You just showed up at the doctor's office, a drop in.
Yeah.
You were a walk-in appointment.
Yeah. I wouldn't say every week, but at least once a month for sure.
They were just like, oh, do you have a reservation, sir? And you were like, oh, I was just hoping to see the doctor, just a quick in and out.
The doctor that I had for like 12 years decided to move to San Francisco. Hmm. And I think it's because I was like, what about Bob? And he was Richard Dreyfuss. And I drove him out of New York City. Because he's like, please God, I can't get rid of this guy.
So you were like a very much a doctor. Do you feel like generally when you go in with an ailment, you get a result? Like they fix, like they can diagnose you, you can find some kind of solution.
No, I mean, I almost go in always with the worst case scenario. Like I had a lump under my armpit once and I was like, this is definitely a lymph node tumor. Mm-hmm. I know it is. You just go in, you're like, I know it is. Just tell it to me, doc. Just give me the news. It's like, all right, let's do a biopsy, find out. I'm telling you right now, David, it's not cancer. He's like, but you're not an oncologist. You're a general practitioner.
Not only do you go in with the worst case pessimism, but also skepticism about your doctor's ability to confirm the diagnosis you have already issued.
No, he's trying to assuage me to be like, everything's going to be okay. And I'm like, nothing's going to be okay, doctor.
And you're like, you're not qualified to tell me everything's going to be okay, doctor.
Yeah.
I need a second opinion that this is worse than you're saying it is.
So, yeah, I do enjoy going to the doctors. You know why I love going to the hospital?
No. Why?
You guys like going to the hospital?
No.
You got worst case scenario covered.
Okay.
Dude. Instantly, something goes wrong, boom. First in line. You're ready.
I see what you mean. You're like, if I'm about to die, I'm at the hospital already.
Or if anything, there could be something that's happening, but you get a different ailment, whatever. Mm. Hospital is a wonderful place. I've always enjoyed, even when it scares the hell out of me. Yeah.
I can see there's a sense of security built into just being at the hospital. I can understand that.
It would be like, oh man, I'm hungry and I got thrown into a thrust of a three Michelin star cooks. Oh no, what's going
to
happen?
Oh, I happen to be in this
kitchen.
I'm
so hungry. You have so many beautiful produce and fish and meat. Oh no, I'm so hungry.
Right. But the Bobby Kennedy version of this is like, more people die in hospitals than anywhere else. Coincidence? I think not, Dave. I think not. Oh, they're going in and they're dying? No, the hospital is killing them. Don't go to hospitals.
I was scared to death of going into hospitals because, like, people, when we were going through COVID, I was like, you're all sick people. You're all coughing. I need to get the fuck out of here.
You know what sucked in the peak, like, probably was the third week of the pandemic when it was, like, super dangerous to go to a hospital? Remember, everyone was like, don't get sick. You don't want to go to a hospital.
Yeah.
Who was passing kidney stones? Me.
Just in there. I feel safe in here. You were like, I want to go to the hospitals right now because they're less crowded.
No, they were unfortunately very crowded.
Oh, that's right. They were
the only crowded. Time I don't like going to a hospital, quite frankly, is like I want to go to the non-emergency room, but there's like two emergency rooms. The one where, you know, it's like the run of the mill stuff. I'm totally down with. The big time emergency room stuff, sometimes I'm okay with. Oftentimes I'm like, ooh, don't look over there. you know?
I want to be surrounded by like bumps and bruises and broken bones, yeah. Not by
baby
like,
ward for the most part, pretty awesome.
I like the baby ward.
Entire elective surgery, I don't give a shit, right? But for the most part, I would say the pediatric division is the worst place.
Why is that?
Anytime I go and I see, you just see kids just super sick. It's the worst. It just breaks me in half.
Yeah. When you have to see, yeah.
Because you've been, as a parent, you know what that's like too. And it's just like, fuck.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of first-time parents when you go there. And you want to just tell them, hey, I don't know what's happening, but I promise you, like, you're in good hands. Can't guarantee anything. This will be like nothing.
Because that's what you want
to
hear.
First send your kid to the hospital. It's the worst, dude.
Yeah. I don't like
and going. Then only to be told, yeah, he's got a lot of gas. What?
He needs to fart.
Yeah. That pain that he needs to fart. You need to change his diet. He's got a lot of farts in him. You're like, what? I came all the way here thinking that he had like appendicitis or something and all he has to do is fart. Yeah. That's what I want to tell parents. Half of you are going to find out that your child isn't farting.
And you're going to have to go out of pocket for that. I don't like going to the doctor or the hospital because I've spent my entire life being ashamed of my body. And like the hospital is just like your body is out there. Just out, you just have to like be open to your body's.
Yeah, but what I like about that? Hippocratic oath.
They can't say anything. You know? But here, let me give you an example though.
But you know that they are at lunch break.
Like, oh, for sure. For sure they are. They're like, oof, I have not seen that for a while.
So on the flight over here, as I was hobbling, man, this pain, by the way, anyone that has upper body nerve pain, feeling for you right now. And nothing really works. Nothing. Except mushroom chocolates.
I was going to say.
No. Somebody offered that to me. And I was like, I don't know if that's going to work.
Because that could be a few hours of worse. And anytime you have
back issues, yeah, everyone's an expert. And I'm just like, just stop. Just stop talking. Yeah. Yeah. Did you get a massage? Like, you think that wasn't my first? This is exactly, anyone that has back pains and real back pains, like real back pains, like Mark Vetri kind of back pains. Mm-hmm. That guy's got like titanium in his spine and he's still doing jiu-jitsu and rolling out some of the best pasta Italian food in the world. Love you, Mark Vetri. Real back pains. Anytime you say you have back pains, one, everyone says you should talk to my doctor. Okay. Mm-hmm. Even though that they have never had real back pain issues. Two, you should see my masseuse.
Next time somebody says, have you gotten a massage? You should see my masseuse. You should just say, what's that? What's a massage? What is that?
Three is always like, have you ever tried an acupuncture? you're like, what are you supposed to say? Yeah. Like, am I not fucking Asian?
Yeah. Self-administered.
You ever tried acupuncture? I'm like, you're a white person telling me about acupuncture. Just stop it.
Yeah. No, you should respond. Have you tried
any of these herbal medicines?
Right.
Have you tried this thing called ginseng before?
Right. You just have to respond with even more Chinese mysticism. You just have to be like, actually, my chi right now in the year of the wood dragon does not actually go with acupuncture right now. I can't do it during this year of the dragon. I'm going to wait for the year of the sheep to do it again.
We should do a new segment. And listen, for those that are listening, we've been warming up to this. There will be some changes. We are going to, again, the only constant to this podcast is change. And there's something that I really want to change, but may not be able to do that for technical reasons. Correct, Yang?
We're working on it. Hopefully.
So if we can go there, then it'll be in our studio. And there, if we can't do that, there's a couple other avenues. But we're going to change it up. I think what we've realized is we've done sort of a pandemic podcast for 3+ years, and we got to change it up. And I think we're going to go back to more interviews. I don't think we'll go back to just culinary interviews before, but, you know, we're figuring it out. Yes. You don't need to be critical. I think we are very aware. We are also clearly overextended right now. But once we get our bearings, we are going to come full blast back into this. We'll not be very different, but I think it'll be structured and more organized and trying new things. One of those things I wanted to try, go back to, is just annoying features in society. Annoying people. Things that are terrible people doing seemingly random, innocuous, harmless things. So on the flight over here, this woman who's wearing I don't know. I learned a lot about her sitting on the other side of her. She was talking to two other people that were talking about, oh, the water at my Balibu house is too cold. I got to get we're going to go somewhere warmer, et cetera, et cetera. It was like that kind of conversation. Like, oh my God.
Relatable.
And then I was the entire time with the Grace. I was like, what the fuck? Just to give you a sense of this person, I'm just going to give you one example of this woman. Mm-hmm. Hey, so Chris Yang, do you work out? And you say, yeah.
Yeah, I try to. Try to stay healthy.
Looks like you live, Chris, right? And then she goes to the woman that she's talking to, upper body, like, it looks like you definitely do strength training. Without anybody asking her, it's like, I run. And the next line is, I did a 4.5 minute mile and then a 2-minute half mile. Nobody asked her.
This is just unprompted.
And I'm like, unprompted.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Imagine the rest of the conversation.
Wow. That's amazing. That's a new
level. I learned how capitalism works. I learned how investing works. I learned about lactic acid buildup. I learned about how successful her children are that both went to Wharton, since they both went to Wharton. Mm-hmm. I learned about, you know, New York. I learned about all kinds of things.
I'm sure you learned about which ethnicities aren't trustworthy. I'm sure you learned about all sorts of fun things.
No, that's West Palm Beach, dude. No, and listen, we're in Delta. All right. We're like a normal thing. I was just like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah. You're not flying a private plane. You're just on a commercial plane.
I don't understand why. That's just not me. Why would you want to let everyone know how awesome you are?
I mean, she was announcing this to her companions, like just saying, I ran.
They clearly were like, hit it off.
Oh, this is strangers.
Oh yeah. 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 Strangers.
So she was just announcing to the person sitting next to her, I ran a 4.5 minute.
And then announcing mile. To everybody else too. Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay. I don't approve of this. I don't get that. This is why the humble brag was invented.
I think I took a photo of her. I was so annoyed with her.
I mean,
I'm not gonna air it. I'm not gonna fucking, what do they call it? Dox? I'm not gonna dox her. She looked like Doris Goodwin, though, the historian.
Did you actually take a picture? I mean, can we blur it or cut it out? Can I see it? I want to see it. Did you take a photo?
I don't have a photo of her. It's upsetting.
I've taken photos of annoying people in airports just to show friends, though. That's actually a real thing. Documenting assholes in the wild.
Nothing gets me more upset.
That's
where my rage gets just... That knows no bounds. Airport rage is real. I can't stand it.
Can I ask you guys something? Maybe this is not appropriate, but can a female person be a douchebag? Or is that just a male thing? Are only men douchebags? You know, is that appropriate, or do we have to cut this out?
I don't think we have to cut it. I think it's a fair assumption that, you know, generally men that are eligible to be douchebags.
Yeah.
I can't think of any. Chris, have you ever thought that about somebody? Like, not, you don't have to name them, obviously.
Well, you know, and like, you know, this is what I really love about the other, like, the Romance language. This is what I love about Spanish or Italian. If the ending of the noun is an O, then it's masculine. If it's an A, it becomes feminine. But there's no just like masculine, feminine form of douchebag, right? I wish we could just easily port it over. Douchebaga.
Don't you call him, isn't it? I just think it's a, non-binary term, right?
You think it's a genderless? A douchebag is a genderless.
Genderless,
term?
Yeah. You're being a fucking, just like you're stupid. Is, you know, those are just for dudes. Hey, dumbass, that's just not for dudes. That's fucking genderless.
Generally speaking, if I close my eyes and imagine a dumbass, I'm imagining a man. Though I'm not generally imagining a woman. If I close my eyes and imagine a dumbass, I'm just saying. Maybe you're right. You're probably right, but I think generally speaking, douchebag and dumbass are masculine terms.
All right. Anyway, with that uplifting message, let's take a break and we'll get back to a bad Yelp review, a Nast Dave, and culinary battleship, aka price fixing.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Great iced tea takes you somewhere else, like new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea that we have here at the Spotify Studios and drink quite a bit, where unexpectedly blackberry flavor transports you to a berry delicious place. So refreshing, you may never want to leave. You will eventually have to, though. But take your time. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf. That's 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. What do we got here, you know?
All right, we got a bad Yelp review. It's time for Freezing Cold Yelp Reviews / Yelping the Yelpers, where we take some of the internet's most cringeworthy Yelp reviews and defend America's small businesses. This one's a short one.
Hey, I know this segment already has two names. Freezing Cold Yelp Reviews and Yelping the Yelpers. But can I throw out one more? What about, instead of Elite Yelpers, we have Delete Yelpers. Can we do Delete Yelpers?
I like that one. That's clean. I like that.
All right.
Sounds like somebody worked at McSweeney's too long.
Just jealous. He's just jealous, Chris. I like the name.
I'm going to go back to the intern application pile and see if one David Chang applied to be an intern at McSweeney's and was rejected in 1999.
Hey man, on lunch break, you want to play hacky sack with me?
Yeah. Okay. You are confusing stereotypes. We were not hacky sackers, man.
Hey, I really love that patchouli you were burning the other day. You mind telling me what brand that was?
This is the wrong stereotype, dude. We were not patchouli burning fucking hacky sackers, dude. That is not what it was. It was like, do you want to go?
I mean, everybody there got a Ralph Nader tattoo. So that's weird.
We did. I think we did have some like
green party forever.
I think there was like a green party fundraiser at the McSweeney's office one time, but that's neither here nor there. It's fine.
I mean, literally, I don't know why we don't make this sitcom. You are Doogie Howser, but as editor in chief of McSweeney's.
On low stakes,
this man child in charge of grown ass men and their literary tastes.
No stakes, Doogie Howser. All right, let's do Delete Yelpers.
Delete Yelpers. All right, this one's a short one.
Ooh, this is a fresh one. This is a fresh Yelp review from February 29th,
2024.
This guy decided he got a bonus day. He got a bonus leap day, and this is how he chose to spend it.
Pho79 is the family namesake restaurant of Deep as well. It is a terrific restaurant, and it's smack dab in the Bermuda Triangle of everything delicious. Like everything is delicious. I dare you to like walk 5 minutes in that area and not stop at three restaurants and stuff yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Garden Grove. Very, very good. The pho was decent, but do not order the rare because the boiling soup will cloud your bowl, making it unenjoyable. They have three sizes and prices, which is kind of cool. The only negative I have is how TF, which is for Gen Alpha, the fuck, can they take cash only and have the nuts to add tax on top, cheating on taxes and charging customers. I will contact BBB and have them look into these communists ASAP because I have nothing but time. LOL.
Flawless. Flawless Yelp review.
I think this has got to be a troll. Like a fake person. What
this
else?
This guy has 106 reviews. 65 of them are one star.
Yeah, they're all from, you know, St. Petersburg, Russia. If you look at the IP address.
He sounds like a real person, dude. It's crazy. I read a lot of these, and I sacrificed my brain cells for our listeners, and this was rough.
But this,
the soup has to be boiling because that's why it's rare. And it's supposed to get a little cloudy because it's blood that gets cooked. That's what happens.
Hey, I agree that having three sizes and prices is kind of cool, though.
That is pretty cool. It's very nice of them. The only negative to that, though, Chris, is that they're raking in the taxes.
I mean,
cash. I don't even understand that.
He is making this logical leap that a business that takes cash only is not paying taxes. And I mean, how can you accuse somebody of being a communist and also that they don't pay taxes? That seems impossible.
I
mean,
I don't know that Vietnamese fled communist Vietnam to come to capitalist America to open up a communist business.
This is wild.
I'm pretty sure if you talk to Deep and that horrific boat that she had to be on with her family, they were doing it just to cheat you on taxes.
Just to spread communism and cheat taxes. That's why they were fleeing, for sure. That's why her entire family endured what they did so they could get here so they could catch them out. In contact, BBB.
He's provided 65 one-star reviews. Come at me, bro. Let's go.
Why are you so angry? It's basically Stan from the Eminem song. He's just very upset at a lot of things and just like needs a little love.
What the hell is BBB?
It's he's going to contact the Better Business Bureau and or the Bed Bath & Beyond. it's one of those two.
I hope you do contact BBB. And after you come put in your formal complaint, they're going to put you on the no-fly list. I can't believe this motherfucker leaving one-star reviews everywhere.
This is crazy.
Now, if I was food czar of America, this guy would be banned.
I want to see but to study his negative reviews is not to get to know. I think we have to look and see what he has given. Oh, here we go. 5 stars. For the Garden Grove Hyundai dealership.
Well, represent.
Who gives a 5-star review to a car dealership?
This is insane. Dude, the Hyundai Sonata is the shit, bro.
Hey, wait. Here's another good one. Habitat for Humanity. 3 stars. What is he reviewing?
Doctors Without Borders. 1 star.
These doctors clearly have borders.
They're only doing it for free. All of it's for free. It's bullshit.
Wait, he has a 1-star review for an elementary school because they had a fire drill. Like, what is happening right now? I don't know, man. I do think, like, if somebody was angling to become a delete Yelper, this is the kind of Yelp page they would have. This guy really wants to be
all right
called out.
If you find out about this, you can email us at askdave@majordomomedia.com and let's have you on the show. Come on.
Come on.
Let's do it.
Let's find out why you're so mad. Let's find out why you're so mad.
All right. Let's take a break. This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs, scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing, keeping it bullshit free. That's why their pasture-raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
We got an Ask Dave here. What do we got here, you know?
Remember, you can always send us your questions to askdave@majordomemedia.com, or our Discord users can just tag me at, you know, with questions, and I'll be sure to read them for a chance to be featured on the show. This first one is from Joe, making the transition out of fine dining. Hey, Dave, longtime listener, first-time caller. My question is, what advice would you give a younger chef that's making a transition from working in fast-paced Michelin fine dining restaurants their whole career to working at a high-volume banquet corporate gig in a new city? Basically, he just goes on to say, I have ample days off, better salary, or better quality of life, but I feel like my past culinary training is useless, and I'm not satisfied with the level of food I'm being asked to prepare.
I think you got to look at it as a job. And I think that's almost how you should always look at cooking, as a job. You know, there's a line that Marco Pierrewhite says, if where he talks about a restaurant is about making money as well. You know, if you can't pay the bills, it's all for naught. I think that's what gets lost. A lot of things gets lost in the restaurant world. One of which, as an operator, before you get an operator as a restaurant, when you're a cook or somebody that's climbing up the ladder, is understanding what the end goal is for all of that. It's not necessarily just making sure customers leave happy. The end goal is that the product that you are serving, you are returning with more money, you know, for each transaction. It's harder to do that, right? It's hard to do that at all, to turn a profit. But like, if you look at your job as an art career versus a craftsman, then I think you will be always perpetually underwhelmed. And I think it's okay to feel disappointed because you've almost been brainwashed. I think, Joe, a good person that you should follow and maybe even talk to would be our good friend Dan Giusti of Brigade. Dan was the head chef of Noma back when it was arguably at its peak of its powers. Not that it's not at its peak, but like in terms of the cultural context of where food was at, the zeitgeist, when people really matter, like in the food world, right? When it was at, I would say when fine dining was at its apex, Dan was running that, and he left to operate a program, a business that fed schools and prisons. And I don't think there's any shame in making something good and delicious. It doesn't always have to be with tweezers and squeeze bottles and four hands at the pass or whatever. I don't think there shouldn't be any shame. And, you know, this is a longer conversation. When I lived in Japan, I think a lot of the ramenas and the chefs, they liked it because they were the punks of the whole food world because it wasn't considered food. Every step of the way, food has had some kind of pocket where people have thought to themselves, oh, this isn't food. This isn't fine dining, you know? Whether it's pizza, whether it's barbecue, whatever, it had its moment where I'm like, oh, that's not cooking. So for you to do banquet and corporate gigs, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. If it's paying the bills, that's what you got to do, right? And doing that well is a whole nother story. So I think that's the challenge I would put to you, Joe, is like, can you do it and can you make it awesome, right? Can you make it a transcendent experience as a banquet corporate gig? And you can still affect change in ways that you didn't think were possible. So
yeah,
that's what I think.
Yeah, I think it's well said. I mean, I totally understand the thing is, right? Like I want to do art. I want to do creative stuff. And now I'm in this job that is not what I intended, right? This is like a tale as old as time. Like you can talk to cab drivers who immigrated to America, who used to be chemistry professors, wherever they came from, right? Like you end up doing something that you feel is not using your skills. But I also think what you just said is totally true. Like, culinary training isn't just culinary technique, right? To me, when I look at you, Dave, and I look at chefs and I look at cooks, the thing that I admire most is like the fastidiousness and the commitment and the resourcefulness. And yeah, that's what Dan Giusti is trying to bring to schools. And the other day, I mean, the last thing I'll say, Chang, you and I were talking about John and Vinny and how those dudes started as like the guys who made Crafty on movie sets. They were just caterers.
That's right.
And look at John and Vinny now. Like, they just did a good job of what they had to do.
Joe, again, this is like, I wish there was a less douchier phrase, culinary arbitrage. I think you're doing a good trade here. It's hard to make your name in the Michelin world, or whether you think fine dining is dead, it's not dead, but it's going to be harder to make a name for yourself now than it ever was before. It's just hard. It's just hard. It is. There's so many good cooks. There's so many good restaurants because the access to information is all there. It doesn't mean that you have the technique yet, but you have access to it. And, you know, it's like things come full circle. I think you're going to have restaurants that are not chef driven, but more front of the house driven, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like we're just at that time right now where making a name for yourself, doing bespoke, high-end, independent restaurant stuff, not that it won't be successful, it's more difficult. That's all I'm trying to say. And I think you should look at this as a good trade, and a trade I mean as you're trading something, you're selling high on a skill set that you learn and positions that you had in your previous city. And now you're going to a new city, wherever that is. And I like it because nobody's doing it. So I'll give you an example, Joe. I necessarily didn't want to cook ramen. I wanted to work at 3 Michelin star restaurants. I wanted to go work at Arpège, but I couldn't get into Arpège. So I went where my gut wanted me to go, which was Japan and ramen. I didn't realize like nobody was interested in it. And I was studying something that gave me an expertise that nobody else really gave a shit about. And that could have been anything. You know, I happened to choose ramen. You are choosing a larger sort of genre in and of itself, corporate banquet dining. But it's quite possible that you doing this job is going to unlock something for you that you didn't realize that might have been a creative block to creating up dishes or whatever. But also, it might teach you the other end of running a business that you knew you were never going to get in the previous positions you were in. Because I think understanding how to operate and cook at scale and doing catering and doing banquets, weddings, conferences is so fucking hard to do well. And maybe that becomes your job and you are so good at it, you start your business. I don't know. But if you look at this as an end goal, as a sad place where you're just going to grow old, then that's exactly what's going to happen. If you look at this as an opportunity, it's your job to literally find the lemons and turn this shit into lemonade. The most delicious fucking glass of lemonade you ever had. That's how I like to look at things. So, you know, quite frankly, if I'm reading this as I interpret it, it's like, this is an opportunity because no one else is doing this because it's not necessarily cool. I think a lot of great food trends and cultural trends have started when people have done something that were historically uncool. Again, good examples of what Dan Giusti is doing. Still may not be cool. I think it's cool. And maybe you can change the game that way. So a lot to be said. Thanks for writing in, Joe.
So next one is our Korean barbecue banchan policy. Hey, Dave. Question about banchan ordering at Korean barbecue restaurants. I never know the etiquette or rules. Is it as many refills as you ask? Is it one or two? Do different restaurants have different standards? Help me out, Dave. Paul.
There's different banchan, for sure. They will never say it, but I would say there's more than two types.
Anytime somebody goes to a restaurant like Park's Barbecue and reports back to you, Dave, that they went there, I think your first question is always like, what banchan did you get?
Well, no, it's not that. I just think people need to know, like, this is a more complex answer, right? And what I mean by there are tiers of banchan, right? So let's just lay it all out there. Banchan is something that you eat with rice. It's something that you don't even have to go to a restaurant. You get that at a Korean home. Like it's always there. It's always present. It's always, for the most part, room temp. It's salty, fermented, spicy, whatever. But it's changed over the years where it's a lot of vegetables, a lot of namo, whatever. But when I say when you go to a Korean restaurant, it doesn't have to be Korean barbecue. Different restaurants that specialize in different kinds of food are going to give you different kinds of banchan that are like the standard. It's not coming to me exactly because there is a lot of sort of crossover. But like, you're always going to get something. Some places are going to have a more robust, more varied thing of banchan, right? They just crush your table. Sometimes that doesn't happen until they'll give you some kimchi or something to start, but they won't give you the rest of the banchan until you order something like a meat or entree. Then you'll get nicer banchan. Sometimes if you're a regular, they're going to give you the soigné banchan, right? The kejang, the stuff that they're not going to give every table, right? When the flowering crabs, the special kimchis, the there's like endless amounts of different things that you could potentially get as a sort of soigné banchan experience. The reason I say it's important. Oh, the last rule is this. Don't ask for banchan if you have banchan already on your table, the same banchan. And you just don't. And the most important rule is if you do ask for banchan, you better eat that all. Like, so that's why we got to go over the rules first. It's okay not to eat all your banchan, right? If you don't like it. But if you ask for a re-up on one and you choose not to eat it, that's disrespectful. And that's a rule that way too many people actually fail to acknowledge. I think, again, it's important to lay these rules out here is because you got to know what you can ask for and what you can't, right? So if they did put kejang on the table, whether it's yangnyeong or the kangjang kejang, whatever, sometimes both, you're not going to ask three or four times for them. You're just not. You know what I mean? If they give you like really nice changjirim, sometimes you get changjirim, which is like beef braised in soy and sugary. It's delicious. Kids eat it all the time with like butter rice. When you get hot changjirim to me, should not be banchan. It should be a main course, in my opinion. Always has been. It's like nostalgia and it's delicious. I love it. I'm so glad I cook it for my kids. But when you get that at a restaurant and it's served warm, you're not asking for multiples because like they're giving you like meat. You know what I mean? Like you don't re-up on meat over and over and over again. It's not all you can eat. So I would say refill once. And you got to be judicious on the one. If you are lucky enough to get something that's soigné, I'm almost never asked for another one. Right? Unless they're giving me like a kongnamul or some kind of like salad that they make that is easier for them to do that's low cost.
I don't know that this will ever translate, man. I think this is like an untranslatable cultural thing. It's the idea that you are self-governing and putting yourself in the role of the restaurant being like, hey, they gave me a high ticket item. I can't just ask for more beef. I can't just ask for more jangjirim is like so deeply ingrained. I don't want to make this about like race, but like, I don't think a white person sees it that way. They're like, this is free. I want more, right? How much of this can I get?
Okay. The refill you can get over and over and over again is the kongnamul bean sprouts, but sometimes they have a fancy bean sprout salad, right? And not all kimchi is the same. Okay. You know, when you're getting some baller kimchi and you know, when you're not. Kimchi, for the most part, you can get all you can. Like, you know, if a table is eating totorimuk, which is a Korean acorn jelly, which is very difficult to pick up with metal chopsticks, which is actually impossible to do. I don't think it's possible.
It's possible.
It's not.
It's possible. You just, come on, man.
You gotta stab it. You know, so if you have a table of white people, for the most part, or non-Korean people ordering it, and they're really into totorimuk, and they want more of it, then yeah, that's cool. I think everyone gets a kick out of that. Right? What did you say? You know, it's like, I wouldn't imagine the Ajima being like, oh.
I think the best way to indicate that you want more is to just finish it and finish it fast. You know, like, because they're going to stop by your table and be like, holy shit, five of these are gone. You know, and they'll just like take the little banchan plates away and be like, I got your refills on these. My thing with the kejang though is you can't get a refill on kejang. I'm like, once you're done, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. It's usually just one enough for one, everyone at the table to get one piece, you know? And I never ask for more unless they offer it, you know, like Jenny from Parks will offer it a lot.
That's Jenny, dude.
That's just Jenny. By the way, Jenny's new restaurant is fucking great.
Yeah. It's I saw you good. Posted about that.
Whoa. It's like a 25-year-old Jenny opening up a restaurant. It's like a young, it's like a young person's, it's like a young soul, you know, it's something very modern Korean where young people go type of shit, but good. No, I never thought about it this way, but when you sit at a restaurant, any kind of Korean restaurant, you're going to get bombarded with the blitzkrieg of banchan. And it's just, you're like, wait, I just sat down and the main course is here and it's literally 5 minutes in and what's going on? And it's just this so much action. But there is a protocol that you should follow regardless in terms of the order of what you're supposed to eat, in terms of how you're supposed to eat it. So there is a method in the madness to the whole thing. So, you know, they are judging you on how you're eating too. For example, if you are at a Korean barbecue spot and you're eating, you put kimchi without them doing it. You put kimchi, garlic, and maybe some, the bean sprouts on the grill. They're going to be like, wow. You know what I mean? If I was a server, I'd be like, well, maybe they taught English in Korea. You know what I mean? Like, that's like the first marker. I was like, whoa. Wouldn't you agree? You know, somebody just puts the, just dumps the kimchi right on the grill.
I think the first assumption is like, oh, they're ordering pork. And second is like, yeah, that's a,
even if they didn't, I was like, that's, they've done this before. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And especially then if you can tell the, between the different types of kimchi, because there's the less fermented one that you don't want to put on the grill. And then there's that super fermented, like amber kimchi that they put out there. And you put that with the pork, like,
and if they know to put the, you know, the brisket into the sesame oil, you know what I mean? With the salt and the pepper, and they know not to dip that into like other things, right? If they know to take the marinated kalbi and not dip that into the sesame oil because it doesn't need dipping, you know what I mean? If somebody then, you see them take a little bit nibble of a sliver of garlic, you know, and dip it in the samjang, they're pro, you know what I mean? But to me, what I look for the most when I'm eating Korean barbecue to see if they're a poser or not, when the sam drops, number one, there's some things. If somebody asks, in Korean, they ask, can I get the sesame oil? Because they never give you sesame oil. Changjirim. They never give you the sesame oil. You have to ask for it. That's like, wouldn't you agree, you know?
That's a, yeah, 100%. Because sesame oil is so expensive. I'm like, it's not a joke. So if you don't know what to do with it, you don't deserve it. So, and you got to ask in the beginning in Korean.
It's like, you have to. And that's like, lets the server know. You probably have to ask for it two times too. They ain't going to give it to you once. Right. And it's going to come in a bottle from the 1980s. That's got a rubber band tie-in wrapping paper towels around it. Right. So it doesn't get slippery. It's got to be one of those things. But if somebody did that, I'd be like, I'm in good hands. They didn't have to speak Korean. But, you know, I'd be like, you know, so they, let's just say we're at Parks. We're doing a Parks thing. They get brisket to start. They're, you know, they get pork neck. They get Parks kalbi, you know. And you know this, like, and they don't order mandu, you know. This is like an over. And then they order a gochujang jjigae or a doenjang jjigae. I'm like, whoa, what we got here? Right? They don't order a kimchi pancake. They don't order any jeon. You know what I mean? They get the deluxe sam on the side. They get the sesame oil. They ask for samjang. They're doing it right. And then they get naengmyeon and they say, don't cut my fucking noodles. They're pro. But what I really look for amongst all these things, when the sam, the basket of lettuces and herbs hits the table, they don't go for the fucking romaine bib lettuce. They go for the getting you, right? If I see anybody, even a Korean person, going for getting you first, and they put a little samjang and they put a little garlic in there, and again, like, whatever, right? Like, and they wrap that up and they don't need any rice paper. They're just going straight getting you and be like, and they don't put any rice in that. I'm like, I think we found the chosen one. We found the last airbender.
I got one more. To me, the highest level is like the OG, like you eat kukbap at 5 a.m. after you go on your brisk mountain hike. Okay. Like this is the OG level is you get your jjigae after the meat. You get your jjigae and all your carbs after the meat. So you ask for your actual course. So, generally in the past, like, they would come by and say, shiksa, you know, what would you like for your meal? You know, for like your carbs. So you would eat your meat first and then you eat your carbs and your soup and all that afterwards. So to me, those are the real OGs. Usually when I'm eating with older people, that's kind of like a habit that they have is they'll eat the meat first and then they'll wait on the soup to come out until after the meat is finished. So that's to me is like the highest level of OG. But yeah, a lot of these really check out.
Guess I'm the highest level OG motherfucker you know then.
I didn't know you went on mountain hikes in the morning.
Like, I think the highest level is when you get your japchae and you mix it with your bibimbap and you shake them together and then you just get a noodles.
Markers for the kitchen to know that you are not Korean. You order japchae. You order japchae, mandu, bibimbap.
When you get the Korean starter kit, you mean?
Now, the chance is this is like that there could be a Korean person at the table, but they're entertaining white people. Right? Or there's no Korean people whatsoever. But that's it. You order chap chai. Can I get that chap chai?
No, the unfortunate one is when it's spelled on there and people say japchae. That's the real unfortunate thing that you end up getting ordered.
Yeah, though, to me, again, we don't need to go down bibimbap, right? I mean, I'm like the whitest Korean probably ever made. And I know not to do that shit. I don't know the last time. I think it's acceptable to order bibimbap until bar mitzvah age.
Right. Well, I was going to say, isn't there an exception for the rule?
Once you're a man or a woman, you can't order that anymore in a restaurant.
I was going to say, is there an exception?
That's like the vegan go-to.
An exception for kids and vegans, right?
I'll tell you what, you order bibimbap at my table. That's the only thing you're eating, motherfucker. And like, you are not getting into the meat. Yeah, like, that's it, man.
You just get aggressive over here.
Bibimbap's embarrassing. Okay. If Yuno and I were dining and he ordered bibimbap, it'd be like, where are the cameras at? Where are the cameras at, motherfucker? or like, again, like anybody I know that I go dine with, if they order bibimbap straight up, I know that replicants have taken over the world. You just don't order bibimbap. Bibimbap. You just don't do it.
All right, no more bibimbap.
I don't think anybody understands what we're talking about, but that's okay.
If you've been to a Korean barbecue, you know what we're talking about.
Culinary Battleship.
It's time for Culinary Battleship, price fixing, the game where Dave and Chris try to guess the prices of items on menus at restaurants. The winner is the person who guesses closest to the actual price on the menu. So we're going to go down under to Sydney for Pearl, an upscale Cantonese restaurant overlooking the iconic Harbour Bridge. All right, guys, I'll call out the menu items. And it's in Sydney. It's very posh. Okay. Upscale. Whole Peking duck. And mind you, I've converted everything to US dollars. So please guess in US dollars. So whole Peking duck, signature dry aged, double roasted Peking duck.
Wait. So okay. So you're saying you've already converted the prices from Australian dollars to US dollars?
That's correct.
Okay. So what is that conversion rate right now?
Let me look it up right now.
Oh, we're just guessing. We're guessing in American dollars. How much for this upscale Cantonese restaurant overlooking the Harbour Bridge, the most expensive in the Pearl District or whatever, most expensive place in the Key. What is the dish? Peking duck?
Whole Peking duck. And it is dry aged and double roasted according to the menu.
$225. I'm going to say $210.
What is the Aussie dollar right now? 75 cents to the dollar?
65 cents.
One US dollar is $1.54, yeah. So.
But we're just guessing US dollars. Yuno's done the conversion.
It's 180. So it's probably like 280 Aussie.
Okay. So the actual answer is it's $77.29.
I win.
You guys are off. Yeah, Dave took the round, but. Jeez, guys.
That's a fucking steal. $77 for a whole Peking duck?
I've never heard of Sydney for Pearl.
Yeah, I don't know where this restaurant is.
I live there.
Yeah, this it looks pretty new. But yeah, and I have the Aussie price here as well. It's 119 Aussie dollars. So
all right, give us another. Give us now that we have our bearings. Give us another dish.
You guys have your you guys menu. Have your anchor. Here we go. Let's do the coral trout fillet. Steamed coral trout fillet, ginger and shallot, 160 grams.
So Peking duck was $77.
I'm going 42 Aussie.
42 Aussie. So that's 27 US. I'm going
to my brain. You know, did you know when you go to Thomas Cook Exchange anywhere in the world, you know why it takes you them so long to calculate the fucking currency difference? It's because they text me.
All right, I'm going 42 US dollars.
Chris, you got it. It's $40.27. So Dave, when you said 42, I was like, damn, that's close. And then you're like, Aussie. And I was like, oh, Jesus. Coral trout fillet, guys. All right. Whole red Australian lobster, 800 grams.
All right. This is the deciding one for this one.
Okay.
Whole lobster, how many grams?
800 grams.
188 Aussie dollars.
I hate that I have to do the conversion to make my guess. I'm going to say 85 US.
Chris, it was 189 Aussie dollars. It was off by one Aussie dollar. Congratulations, Dave. Holy fuck. How is he so good at this game?
One
Aussie. I.
Impressive. All right, impressive.
Let's move on. We're going on to Houston's Cao Ba. Google Maps says it's Vietnamese Cajun fusion dishes from celebrity chef Nicky Tran.
Nicky Tran, who was featured in Ugly Delicious.
That's correct.
Season one.
Served in a casual chic outpost. Casual chic. To help you guys there.
Okay.
So the first one is the Cao Bacio. That
piss off people everywhere. Jesus. I feel like Ugly Delicious, while evergreen, certainly made people mad. What a surprise. I'm personality, Mr. Personality plus plus plus.
Well, while enjoyed widely, was also despised universally. What can you give us a brief tour of the menu? Like not looking at it, like, well, how is this broken down into sections? Just so we have some orientation here.
Sure, yeah. They've got an appetizers of raw, appetizers chilled, appetizers hot. They've got the pho, they've got what they call biggie, which I'm assuming is kind of larger format. And that's it.
Okay.
And then they got their drink.
So what is the dish and what section is it coming from?
So this is from the appetizers raw, and it's the carpaccio. So it's like their spin on a carpaccio. And it says thinly sliced wagyu, red onions, lemon juice, honey, peanut, basil, mint, and nukmam sauce.
Okay. Thin sliced wagyu beef, cold appetizers at a casual chic restaurant in Houston. $3.
Dave?
$18.88.
Okay. First of all,
you're the dragon, motherfucker.
Of all the fucking. It's a Vietnamese restaurant, David. Second.
Tet!
Chinese Vietnamese.
Fucking Tet!
Tet, but like the eight's a Chinese thing, right?
Sure, I don't know.
It's all of Asia, dude.
It's not all of Asia.
You think eight is okay. Only lucky in China? Eight is lucky all around the world, man.
I don't know if this is Chris's Chinese imperialism.
Come on, okay. Man.
Dave, you nailed it. It's $20. So Dave was closer. By
he nailed it. It was a closer off. By 83 cents. If he hadn't done that 88 thing, he wouldn't have won that.
Chris, he was $1.88 closer than you.
What did I say?
So
I said 22.
You said 23.
Oh, fine.
All right. The next dish is the FOB. It is a boatload of fried soft shell crab served with green chili nukmam sauce.
From what section? Biggies?
And I am just making sure that I am It is in the hot appetizer section.
A boatload. Oh God, it's a FOB pun. I disapprove of. Yeah, I disapprove of this dish.
I mean, she can make that joke.
A boatload of softshell crab.
$68.
$32.
Okay, I need to double check to make sure this is accurate. But I believe it was $12. I'm not even kidding, dude.
What? You can't just find like the most anomalous fucking thing. I've never heard of a boatload of crab for $12. I'm going to go so far as to say if you find a boatload of crab that's $12, you shouldn't order it.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
I mean, different, completely different. They're very difficult in different ways. But if you had to say absolute value of difficulty, Dinnertime Live or Ugly Delicious to make?
Dinnertime Live is so difficult. And I'm really excited to get a crack at episode 7. I think I have an idea of how to make it us. You know, it's funny. I was reading some of the reviews for all the, not that it's a late night show at all, but like Seth Meyers got destroyed. I think it's going to take us some reps to find a cadence, and maybe that never happens. So be it. But the difficulty on Dinnertime Live is a different thing altogether because it's more of a team effort. Not that Ugly Delicious isn't, it wasn't. It, so many people working on it on Morgan Neville's team and our squad. It's the hardest show I've ever made. Although Dinnertime Live is the hardest show I've ever made too. Ugly Delicious was, I don't think people understood how difficult, I don't think people understand how difficult it was to make. When I say that, I think we're the only food show that's ever done it without voiceover. I've said that a lot of times. I don't think people appreciate that. There is no voiceover in Ugly Delicious. Let me state that again. Watch it again and watch any other food show. I'm not saying they're not great, but you don't have to spend the time to collect everything. You can get, if you have a 30-minute show, you can get 12 minutes of B-roll. And that B-roll is you summarizing all and gluing together the different parts. In a lot of ways, it's easier. Not that it's easier because it's so difficult. It's easier because, you know, in the post-production, you can make it all work with a narrative voiceover. We didn't do anything. We actually had to find the stories and make a collage to make it work. And that's what made it so fucking hard to do. Because we were, every episode, whether it's pizza, fried chicken, or whatever, we were literally going with a thesis that we're trying to prove. Oftentimes knowing that the thesis was flawed, but it was still like, well, we're just going to try to explore it anyway. And 150 days of travel, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the one reason why, if Ugly Delicious doesn't happen again, I feel confident that we'll be able to get another season if we wanted to. There's two things. I don't know if we have anything left to say, right? And two, it's just so fucking hard to make.
Yeah, I was trying to find an analogy that doesn't make us sound like a douchebag, but it is. It's just like if it's like two different, they're both hard in very distinctive ways, right? Like to watch Dinnertime Live, like that's it's somebody who can like draw something in the moment, making like an accurate courtroom sketch that's perfectly rendered. And Ugly Delicious is like a meticulous sand mandala. Right? That's just like more of a marvel of the amount of time that has to go into it to make this thing.
Yeah. When I watch other shows, I'm always like, man, but they're doing voiceover. they're doing voiceover. It is so much fucking easier.
Right. And so so people understand why voiceover helps. It's like, here we have two disparate scenes. If only with Morgan's method, it's always like, you need them to tell the story themselves. These two scenes have to tell the story and you have to find the connection and you have to find the point of connection between these two interviews that happened on different sides of the world and then connect them. Voiceover allows you to say like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if somebody like just drew this line between these two? Oh, let's just have Dave say it. Just let Dave draw that connection for us. And like, that's way, way, way easier. I mean, there's no, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, that was Bourdain's magic. Was he was an incredible. I would say
one example is where it's a Cannonball Run, except that we all have to meet up from New York to Los Angeles. We'll get there. We get there with no navigational tools. No odometer, no nothing.
Yeah.
No GPS, no nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Like we literally found a way to get there somehow. Mm-hmm. We get there. We're better for it.
I miss it.
Everyone
though.
Else, they get a GPS.
I miss it. I do miss making that. I miss being in the weeds of that and thick of that, being lost and trying to find our way between scenes and having those conversations and going out and trying to like prove a theory of Dave's right. You know what I mean? And being proved wrong sometimes. That was like the whole thing with our steak episode. Remember, Chang? It was just like, I can tell you everything about somebody by how they order their steak. And we went out to try to prove that. And we were like, oh shit.
First 5 minutes, it was wrong.
It was wrong.
We spent so much time planning an entire episode about, you know, judging somebody and their steak that if they order it well done, they're a Philistine idiot. And then it was like, Obama eats a steak well done. We're like, fuck.
It was literally within the introduction of the show. We're like, oh shit. Our entire hypothesis is wrong.
So. And so we spent a long time creating this entire elaborate story structure, hoping that you'd hit it. And then what came out of it was meat is a celebration.
A completely different point that I loved. Like, I remember you and I would have these conversations and you would, and like, I remember almost clearly like the epiphany of you being like, I figured it out. Like, this is why we eat meat. And it goes back to like our most primal roots. And that's what this episode is really about. And I was like, I have goosebumps thinking about it now. And like, that's why I do miss that sense of discovery for us, whether or not we have something left to say. I liked discovering those threads. So,
I mean, I know that we do, but man, I think, I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze.
It's really fucking hard. It's really hard. It's really hard being in, like, I'm looking back on it fondly, but like, man, we are.
Listen, I watched an episode recently and I was like, wow, it really is evergreen as fuck. You know, I feel really proud about what we did. I'm bummed we didn't win that Emmy. So that's going to be on my tombstone.
Yeah, we got to get like, that.
You know, I ain't going to win it with Dinner Time Live.
We did. Our Emmy nomination came during the fucking pandemic Emmys. We just sat on our computers as our names were not read.
Anyway, we don't need to go to the last one because it's in the Bay Area and who gives a fuck?
Fucking guy.
Dave's calling it early because he's winning. He has the first one.
We can do it. Let's do it quickly.
Did he win? He won both, right?
Oh, yeah. He won both restaurants. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Dave. You did win. Congratulations.
Bullshit.
Yeah, he has two.
No,
yeah.
I didn't win the last one. I said $88, $12.
Oh yeah, I won that one.
No. It's the do we do three of these? Oh no, we have one more here. Okay.
All right, fine.
All right, this one's easy. Viagen Seafood Feast. This is also from Calba. A shareable portion of langoustines, king crab, escargot tossed in Viet Cajun sauce, served with corn and potatoes.
Okay.
So $88.
Shit, that's literally exactly what I was gonna say. Damn it. I'm going to say $88.88 then.
And Dave is the winner. It's $57.
Fuck!
This is a steal. Woo-hoo! I got to check this place out.
That's a steal, man. That's a steal. Man,
that's what I'm saying.
Nikki Tran. Someone's got to tell Nikki, like,
up those prices, man.
We ain't in Vietnam no more. All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks, you know. Thank you guys for, you know, sticking with us. We are... 2024 is going to see a metamorphosis. We are going to turn from a ugly caterpillar into a really fucking ugly butterfly. If you missed an episode of Dinner Time Live, you can always get caught up on Netflix, where you can stream all of season 1. Chrissy and Dave Dine Out, also available on Hulu. Give us 5 stars. Thanks, guys.